Let's continue on with our afternoon schedule. I'm Greg Peters. I'm the insurance analyst for Raymond James, selling non-life insurance stocks as well as insurance brokerage and services stocks. We've had a number of companies present today. This is the second specialty insurance company that I'll had presented today. And there are a lot of companies that make the claim that they're specialty insurance companies, yet very few actually execute on that premise and deliver phenomenal results. ProAssurance is one of those companies. In the last 10 years, they've averaged compound annual average growth rate of tangible book value plus dividends of 16%. And the combined ratio, which is the ultimate measure of profitability, has averaged below 80% for the last 10 years. So we've had a very positive view on the stock for some time now, and we believe its results are a reflection of the strong management and core profitability that exists in the book of business. From management today, we have Stan Starnes, who serves as Chairman and Chief Executive Officer, Ned Brand, who serves as the Chief Financial Officer, and Frank O'Neill, who helps out with the investor relations initiatives. So with that, let me turn it over to Ned.
Thanks, Greg, and good afternoon, everybody. For those of you who might be new to ProAssurance, I want to spend a few minutes just giving a brief background on the company. As Greg mentioned, we're a specialty company, and we focus on healthcare, and we seek to cover the broad spectrum of professional liability risks within the healthcare sector. We believe we're really well positioned from a position of financial strength, from a ratings position, from an expertise position to succeed in the evolving world of healthcare. And as Stan will mention in a few minutes, healthcare is a very dynamic area and a lot of changes going on in the healthcare marketplace. In 2012, we continued to execute our plan of disciplined underwriting, expert claims management, and prudent investing, and delivered a 12.4% return on equity, and in turn, our shareholders saw a total return of 13.5%. In addition to the combined ratio that was mentioned earlier, one of the other metrics by which we measure success is growth in book value. We grew book value again in 2012, and that was in spite of paying $3.50 out in dividends per share 2012 was also important for us from an M&A standpoint. We are a kind of a creature of M&A, and M&A has always been an important part of our strategy. We closed two deals right at the end of the year. One expands our MPL line in the state of Nevada and makes us the largest writer of MPL in Nevada. And that continues to fill out that MPL footprint for us. The other was a little different and really fills out a part of that broad spectrum of healthcare that we seek to cover in a company called Medmark that brings us into the life sciences arena. Those acquisitions both came at the end of the year. Neither of them contributed premium in 2012. Just as a reference point, those two companies wrote a combined $50 to $53 million of premium in 2012. We continue to be in an extremely competitive marketplace, and we choose to walk away from business that does not meet our profit objectives. We are not a top-line focused company. We are willing to see the top line shrink in order to maintain our profitability. And that was again the case in 2012. I think as everybody in this room knows, we're in a very challenging investment environment. And while we continue to be a core fixed income investor with a core portfolio of investment grade fixed income securities, we are moving on the margin out of that portfolio into things such as dividend paying stocks, private equity investments, low income credits, housing credits. In spite of these changes that we've made, we were able to stem the tide of kind of the natural attrition of return in the fixed income portfolio in 2012, but we'll continue to face those same headwinds as we enter into 2013 and likely into 2014, barring any change in the interest rate environment. With that, though, we continue our focus on maintaining a superior balance sheet, which we think gives us a competitive advantage in the marketplace in which we compete, which is largely comprised of mutual companies who are substantially smaller than we are. We ended the year making $257 million in operating earnings, or $4.16 a share, $275 in earnings, net income, $4.46 per share. The big difference there being driven by realized investment gains. We also had a realized loss on the retirement of some debt during the year. And as has been the case over the last several years, our results, our favorable results for the year were driven in part by favorable reserve development. Our loss ratio for the year was 33%, and that 33% includes 49 points of favorable reserve development, or $272 million of favorable reserve development. I mentioned earlier that we paid almost $200 million in shareholder dividends during the year. In spite of this, we were able to grow shareholders' equity by 5%, book value per share by 4%, and growing book value, as I mentioned, really is a core tenet of the company. This long-term track record really demonstrates itself. Frank, if we go to the next slide. I think we've touched on everything with capital management. We continue to pay, the $3.50 we paid in dividends last year comprised of an ordinary dividend of $1 and a special dividend of $2.50. Last year that was equivalent to about a 1% yield on our stock. We split our stock at the end of the year. We kept the dividend at 25 cents, so effectively doubling the yield on the dividend. And so we would expect then to pay out the same dollar a share in dividends this year, but on twice as many shares. So anyway, all that goes to our long-term record of growing book value consistently over the cycle. On this graph, we're showing in a lighter color the impact of the dividends. And that, in turn, translates to a stock performance that we think is very enviable. And with that, I'd be happy to turn things over to Stan to give you guys a little more color on our strategy. Stan?
Thank you, Ned. And thank you for joining us today. The sort of macroeconomics of the world in which ProAssurance lives consist of a persistent low interest rate environment, a soft pricing environment, and a healthcare system which is changing rapidly before our eyes. And so the task for those of us in management at ProAssurance is how to navigate the organization through a low interest rate environment that has no evidence of changing anytime soon, through a soft pricing environment that is particularly soft in our segment of the property and casualty market, and through a healthcare system that's changing in ways that we collectively in this room lack the imagination to know the precise contours of in the future that's coming. Juxtapose that with our commitment to long-term profitability and long-term stability. We are in a long-tail business. We price our business years before we have a clue as to what it's going to cost us. Add to that the fact that we seek to differentiate ourselves in the market. We have no desire to be a commodity, and indeed we are not a commodity, and if we ever become a commodity, we will not be serving our policyholders or our shareholders in the way in which we are inclined. So we have to live with these realities, and on top of that, we again reemphasize what we say at every meeting, that we are not a quarter-to-quarter company, we're not even a year-to-year company. We think very long and hard, and we tailor the actions of the organization for the long-run benefit of our three constituency groups, which are our shareholders, our policyholders, and our employees, all encompassed within that two-word slogan you see called Treated Fairly, which is so much more than a slogan at ProAssurance, but a way of life. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment about the healthcare system in the United States, because clearly we as an organization will not be immune to the challenges and opportunities that those changes present. Recall that as you look at the medical professional liability space, it is populated largely by organizations that were created in the 70s and 80s out of necessity. That is to say that physicians in Alabama and Michigan and everywhere else in the country in the mid-70s were confronted by a professional liability environment in which all the commercial carriers were slowly but surely withdrawing. The experience in Alabama was not unlike the experience in every other state, where if you were a physician in Alabama, you woke up one morning and the state-sponsored carrier, Employers of Warsaw, announced that it was terminating all insurance within 60 days. And the only other commercial carrier, which was St. Paul, said if we continue today, we may continue to insure you, but we won't add anybody to your policies. And that began all over the country an exodus of the commercial carriers from the space, culminating finally in St. Paul leaving the physician space in the earlier part of the 2000. So that meant that physicians all over the country started these companies that euphemistically went under the name of bedpan mutuals. And they weren't creations of entrepreneurship. They were creations of necessity if the physicians wished to continue to practice medicine. And so all of these companies, including this one, grew up serving solo practitioners, small groups, which comprise the overwhelming majority of physicians in the United States. And that has begun to change, and has begun to change greatly as healthcare has begun to change. There's an integration afoot in healthcare that is unlike this country has ever seen before. There was a bit of integration in the early 80s and late 90s where physicians went into larger integrated organizations under the promise of expense savings. They were realized for a year or so, and then the physicians realized they really had a boss and they didn't like that, so those activities sort of unwound themselves and integration unwound itself. But it started again in the 2000s, and it continues apace. The recent study by Accenture indicates that the number of independent physician practitioners in this country will shrink by the end of this year to 36%. Now, whatever the number is, that was unthinkable 20 years ago. It's only 36% of the physicians in this country would be independent. And this integration that is going afoot, which is fueled by reimbursement policies, it's fueled by bureaucratic and regulatory overlay, and is fueled by the change in the demographics of medicine, it is continuing apace and accelerating. Hospitals have bought more physicians over the last 10 years than at any time in history, and as I say, in numbers that would have been unimaginable even a few years ago. This is changing the entire healthcare system. We also have the reality of the Affordable Care Act, now declared constitutional by the Supreme Court, and there is zero chance that it will be repealed. It is a part of the permanent landscape of health care in the United States, and next year we'll add 30 million patients and not one new physician under the Act. Think about the implications of that. The health care system is also changing, perhaps more than for any other reason, because it has to. We as a country can't continue to spend the percentage of the gross domestic product of the United States is approaching 20% on health care. No industrialized nation does, and we can't. So we have a health care system that is going to change greatly in the next 5 to 10 years. That will create all sorts of opportunities and challenges for ProAssurance and companies like ours. Harken back now to the competitive landscape we face today, which is largely composed of one- and two-state mutual insurance carriers, a few regional carriers, and a very few so-called national carriers. As healthcare integration continues afoot, the one- and two-state mutuals are going to be left with they're sort of at a fork in the road. They either have to become smaller in order to accommodate a shrinking number of physician policyholders, or they have to find somebody to partner with that will enable them to compete across state lines and with bigger and bigger balance sheets. We think this will create opportunities for ProAssurance in the coming years. We're a product, as Ned said, of transactions, approximately 20 mergers and acquisitions over the years. We think we will have opportunities for an increasing number of those. Now, you can't predict them. You can't make them happen in this space. They're episodic, and you have to be opportunistic. But we have a capital base that permits us to do that, and we have a long history of these mergers and acquisitions. And even to me, more important than our history of announced transactions is our history of integrated transactions. Integration, after all, is the really difficult part of the transactions, and we've done it successfully over and over again, and we think that will be to our favor as the world of healthcare changes. So we, as the slide indicates, are on a bridge. And that bridge, I don't know how long the span is, but we will bridge in the coming years the period in which healthcare in the United States changed from a large number of independent and solo practitioners to integrated healthcare systems. And that will create opportunities for us. And it will create challenges for us. But we have a long history of responding to challenges, and I think that the balance sheet we have will give us opportunities. One immediate opportunity that we'll have in the coming years involves hospital captives. As hospitals have acquired physicians, they migrate them into the physician captives. And clearly, as hospital executives tell me frequently, they have ingested more physicians than they can digest. And the issue for many of these captives will be whether they have sufficient infrastructure, such as claims management, risk management, and whether they take sufficient capital charges to support these additional risks that have migrated into the captives. So we think we will continue to have captives come to us to engage in a variety of arrangements where we lessen the capital needs for their captives, where some of the risk or all of the risk through a portfolio transfer comes to ProAssurance, where we provide for the infrastructure needs made possible by our claims department, made possible by our offices that are spread across the country. We think that will be a significant part of the future growth of ProAssurance. But clearly, not every physician is going to be owned by a hospital. There are going to be a large number that are not, and we continue and will continue to look at those physicians as a very important part of the insured population of ProAssurance. We also will look for ways, as we've already done with Ascension Healthcare, for example, to partner with the large integrated organizations to make available professional liability alternatives for those organizations. As you know, we announced a couple of years ago, Ascension Healthcare came to us. Ascension is the largest Catholic healthcare system in the United States, the largest nonprofit of any type in the United States, and the third largest of any type, profit or nonprofit, and asked us to work with them to form a program called Certitude, in which independent physicians on the Ascension Ministry staffs around the country are insured through the program called Certitude, which brings its professional liability advantages and brings risk management advantages and makes the independent physician relationship with the Ascension hospitals a more permanent relationship, even though it remains an independent relationship. And we think we will do a variety of things such as this with the integrated hospital systems during the evolving world of healthcare. So it will create lots of opportunities for us. And one way we think we have to be poised to take advantage of those opportunities is we have to span the spectrum of healthcare. Whereas all of us come from a history of having been started by physicians for physicians out of necessity, the changes to the world of healthcare that are coming mandate that we span the spectrum of healthcare. And that's why we've engaged in a number of the strategic steps we have taken over the last few years. For example, several years ago we acquired Mid-Continent, a large managing general agency in Houston, Texas. And Mid-Continent now serves as the underwriting arm for ProAssurance for home health care workers. You can't underwrite a home health care worker who brings you a premium of about $800 a person the same way you can underwrite an obstetrician, for example, who brings you a premium of $75,000. So you have to have ways of underwriting. Mid-Continent had that. We purchased them. They've been fully integrated into ProAssurance. And now we insure a large number of home health care workers. Why is that important? As health care changes in this country, we're going to deliver more and more health care in the least expensive place it can be administered. And where is that? Your home. You own it. It requires no bricks and mortars for the health care provider. And that's why we purchased Mid-Continent. We purchased PICA, the Podiatric Insurance Company of America, which we closed in 2009, the largest insurer of podiatrists in the United States. As you know, doctors of podiatry specialize in the treatment of the foot. That's a lower cost level provider than, say, an orthopedic surgeon is. And we are pleased to insure those podiatrists, particularly in view of the fact that they're going to need to be more and more podiatrists in the United States. Diabetes is at an epidemic level, and one of the main consequences of diabetes is deteriorating condition of the feet, which require, because of the vascular insufficiency, which require podiatric care. Medmark, the most recent acquisition, the genetic therapeutics and life science products that Medmark offers. We're sort of dipping our toe in the water there. It was not nearly the largest acquisition we've ever made, but it's a sound acquisition and one which we think will take us further through the spectrum of healthcare. We spend a lot of time in the organization trying to understand what healthcare will look like in the coming years. And I will be the first to say to you that it's murky. It is very murky. But we think we're poised and in a position to take advantage of it, whatever it may look like. These conferences, we usually are asked, am I causing that to happen? I'll raise it up. Are asked about tort reform, so I thought I might spend just a moment with you on tort reform. Tort reform is the response of the states to beginning in the 80s, to an increased feeling on the part of physicians that our judicial system did not treat them fairly, that they could not rely upon the judicial system to understand the very difficult decisions physicians have to make on a regular basis. The tort system in this country is dependent on the laws of the various states. There are some torts governed by federal law, but most tort claims in this country are governed by the law of the state. That's why we say at ProAssurance that we're involved in our business in 50 states, meaning we have 50 different businesses, because you have to conduct the business in each state different. It's up to the states as to what kind of tort system they have, and our job is to accommodate ourselves to best advantage our physicians, whatever the tort system may be. Different states have passed different types of tort reform. And that tort reform is met with mixed results depending on the state. Some states have upheld it, some states have declared it unconstitutional and set it aside. I'd say in the last 3 years, probably the rulings have favored more the plaintiff's bar in declaring some tort reform laws, or at least bits of them, unconstitutional. But that will play out over and over again because the plaintiff's bar never quits about that. If they lose a case in state A, tomorrow, it won't be long before they mount a new attack on the law in state A. They never go home. They never quit. They're very resilient, and they continue along that path, and you can count. It's never over. And that will continue to play itself out. We don't think federal tort reform is likely. In the early part of the 2000s, the Republican Party controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House and couldn't pass tort reform. I don't think you have to spend long studying the situation in Washington today to realize they're not likely to pass tort reform anytime soon. So that's not going to change, in my view, but it's one of the few things about health care that is not going to change. As I mentioned earlier, the pricing environment in which we're operating remains soft, and it's probably going to get softer because you've got all of these companies competing for an ever-shrinking universe of independent physicians. But as Ned said to you, we are not a top-line company. We are willing to see our top line shrink if we can't secure adequate pricing for the risk we're asked to take. We will only write those risks that we think are the correct risk for us to take, and we will only write them at prices that we deem adequate. So we try to be very disciplined in walking away from business that does not meet our pricing requirements. But history teaches us that the pricing environment will change sooner or later. And when it does change, we need to be in a position to take advantage of that, and we think we are. And we will be able to write increased amounts of business at adequate pricing when the pricing environment changes. In the meantime, we have the strength of our reserves, the strength of our balance sheet in general, what I think is extraordinary expertise on the part of our employees to operate in this arena, and we have an evolving world of healthcare that fewer people are going to be able to participate in from an MPL standpoint that has been historically the case. So I'm optimistic. Colin Powell says optimism is a force multiplier, and I think that's probably right. I think we're going to have plenty of challenges. But I like where we are, and I like our chances. We've got a minute or two left, I think, Greg. If anybody has any questions, I'll be pleased to try to respond to them. Yeah, you know, this line, NPL, is the most volatile line of insurance. It's been recognized as a separate segment since the mid-70s, and it has had significant volatility during that period of time. The last several years have been more benign because of the decrease in frequency. We do not think frequency is continuing to fall. We think it is stabilized. Frequency has gone down before. For reasons that are unknown, we're not altogether sure why it went down this time. You ask 10 people, you'll get 10 different answers, and probably some part of all of them is correct. But we would not be surprised if in the fullness of time, if frequency comes back up, it always has. The one thing you know about reserves in a medical professional liability company is they are wrong. The issue is, in what direction are they wrong? And does the company have enough data to understand when its reserves need to move in one direction or another? We recognize the historic volatility of reserves in this line of business, and we reserve our product in a way that we think is prudent. We look at those reserves all the time through our actuarial department, through our independent accountants, and through our independent actuaries. And we peg the reserves every year at exactly where we think they ought to be. But it's a dynamic, evolving process, and it's one that we think we get right. And as we execute our business, if the reserves appear to us to be redundant, we will recognize the development we see at the time. And because of the execution of our business and the decrease in frequency, we have seen reserve development in the past years. You know, we don't predict the future about reserve development because it'll be whatever it'll be as the years unfold. But we do write what is largely a claims-made book of business, so we think we're positioned to be a very conservative. Severity in our book of business, it always goes up, but it's gone up at a manageable rate over the last few years. When severity does tick up, one thing you have to remember is it ripples through every open claim you have. And the other thing you have to remember is in our business, virtually all of our claims are lawsuits. So they're open for a very long time. And so when you set your reserve, you not only have to set it based on where you think severity is today, you have to set it where you think severity is going to be when these lawsuits get resolved. And most of them take some significant period of time to resolve. Other questions? Great. Yes, sir.
John, in all due to the story, tracking perspective, one thing that jumped out to me is the lack of ownership, stock ownership in the management
team. It's over 5%.
That's the only thing out of this chart here. That should be mostly with one person.
Well, I think that's Frank will get with you and get you the right information. I will tell you this, that you know, my bonuses, other than what I have to pay in taxes, are paid in stock. I've never sold a share of it. The long-term performance shares I've been awarded, I'm about to start my seventh year this summer. I've never sold a share of that. The management team are stockholders, and Frank tells me the active management team, 5.5% of the stock. We'll get with you and figure out. I'm not sure what you're looking at, but we'll. Is it the 10-K?
No, I'm sorry. It's the
We'll get it straightened out for you. Yeah. It's a good question, and, you know, I can tell you this. Every member of senior management, a significant part of their net worth, probably more this advised than is advisable, is in ProAssurance stock, particularly mine. Yes, sir. You know, we like to think we stand alone. You know, different analysts have different comps they look at, and it's as Greg said, we truly are a specialty carrier, and you know, because you're a specialty carrier, I'm not sure that over the long term there are any real comps, because it depends on what your business is doing and what's happening in your specialty line of insurance. But it would be one of the specialist specialty carriers. But there's nobody we recommend that you look at like. Yes, sir.
How are the large hospitals and such groups and physician groups on underwriting?
Well, if they buy their professional liability for us, they're not going to underwrite it. We're going to underwrite it. But to get to your question, you know, part of that depends on what you mean by large. If let's say we define large hospitals as 1,200 beds or more, you know, that's probably not our sweet spot. They are very, very big institutions. But the hospitals between 50 beds and 1,200 probably are our sweet spot. And, you know, we have a lot. We've written hospitals for 20 years. We've written physicians for over 30 years. And we have lots of data from lots of different states, and we'll use that data to assess the risk and price the product. There are people who will say, and I would be one of those people, that is, as the captives of hospitals have ingested all of these new risks, have they taken the adequate capital charges, and have they recognized the risks that really are in those captives today? You know, my guess is some probably have. I think many probably have not, and that's why I think they're going to be an opportunity for us going forward.
And we have to stop here, but we'll take follow-up questions in the breakout session.
Thank you all very much.